Hello, and welcome to the Tech Strong AI podcast. I'm Amanda Rizzani, and I'm here today with Mike Vizard. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. We have a lot of AI news and topics to cover today, as always. And so with that, I'll start with our first topic, which is the United Nations has been making some AI-related resolutions. And basically, to sum it up, they're saying that if the AI cannot be controlled and stay within compliance, then they're not to use that AI tool. So just trying to ban the use of systems that can prove to be violators of human rights. So that seems a little difficult. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going to be too hard to actually execute that because, who defines what human rights are? I know the UN tries to, but human rights in China is dramatically different than it is here in the States and other countries, and nobody has a consistent approach. So it's unclear to me how I'm going to ban an AI engine to prevent it from doing something that theoretically it may be allowed to do in some countries and other countries not so much. So I feel like this is the latest example in regulatory concerns around AI, and I'm kind of thankful that they're interested, but B, it's pretty clear it's early days. The story in question here up on the site on techstrong.ai also talks about this document that's being circulated by the United States State Department, where it's worried about the rise of AI that we wouldn't be able to control and what are the implications of that. Now, it looks like it was written for them by an AI consulting firm. There's, definitely going to be some issues here in terms of, things may spin out of control, but it's not like we don't have the controls in place to monitor these systems. And I know it sounds a bit flippant, but, worst case scenario, there is a power cord somewhere that can be pulled. And then, second part of that question is, these systems also have controls around them, right? So we monitor them and we see what's happening. We may not understand everything that's going on in those systems, but it's not like they're just being spun up and tossed out there and saying good luck. There are, people actually monitoring these things and staying within reasonable amount of controls for them. And I'm not quite clear. There's multiple flavors of where AI is going to go, right? There's advanced systems, and then there's, super intelligence, and super intelligence is theoretical, as far as I can tell. There'll be more advanced AI models, no doubt, and we're seeing some of those already where the reasoning engines are getting much more sophisticated in these large language models. So we'll be able to automate more tasks, per se. But I don't think I'm at the point yet where, Terminator's around the corner.
Yeah, and as you said, too, it's very hard to get worldwide acceptance of this, because who's to say what's acceptable, what's not acceptable across the different countries? And so that's going to be difficult. And then, again, how to really control it, it's still a big work in progress.
Now, that doesn't mean that, the regulators should ignore what's going on, because left to their own devices in the pursuit of greed, some companies will do some incredibly stupid things. So we need somebody to kind of provide a little oversight on the other end of this. But I think the challenge is always trying to strike that balance between reasonable adult supervision and the motivation folks have to drive investments in innovation and, the things that drive a capitalistic economy, which, we all stand to benefit from. So I'm hopeful, cautiously, about where these things are going. And, there are folks who are coming together to have these conversations about how to apply AI judiciously. There's conversations between, Microsoft execs and various agencies. But yeah, is there a cadre of AI hardcore folks probably running around Northern California somewhere who are like, devil be damned, and we're just going to throw it at everything? Absolutely. And do they host their own little parties out there? Absolutely. And do we need to keep an eye on what they're doing? Most definitely.
For sure. Well, with that, I think we'll move on to our next topic, which is unconscious bias. And we talk a lot about bias in the AI models. And unconscious bias is quite the quandary, because if it's unconscious, then how do you keep that bias from entering into these models when people are training the AI? And so the suggestion from this article on our site is to have a good diverse team. That way you're bringing in a lot of different viewpoints when training the models, having knowledge sessions and classes to kind of just focus on bias as an issue. And then the other idea is to use tools, automation tools. But again, any kind of technology you're using or automation tools that you're using is made by a human. So again, how do you remove that bias? So there's still some concerns how to do it, but it says 66% of organizations experience data bias in the models, and 78% are concerned it will just get worse. So what are your opinions?
The devil's in the data. The models themselves are a mechanism. Where things are going wrong is that the data being used to train them is stuff that's coming out of existing applications. And a lot of those analytics applications or whatever it may be are deeply flawed, because the way we created the app or the way we collected the data was fundamentally biased. For example, it is not uncommon for there to be some sort of redlining of real estate areas, right? So if you're unaware of that activity and you're just throwing a data analytics application together, you will conclude that, you should never buy a house in this area because, it's just valuations are horrible. And then you start making business decisions based on that, or your personal decisions, and demand for housing drops, and suddenly the valuations of those housing declines because demand went down. And it's all baked into the fact that, somebody decided somewhere that, they wanted that outcome. But that was happening long before AI. It's just being highlighted and maybe augmented or accelerated in the fact that, we're using these AI models. As one person once joked to me, he said, it's one thing to be wrong, it's another thing to be wrong at scale. And that's the issue with AI.
Absolutely. And the problem is that data can always be kind of manipulated to read how you want it to and to give the outcomes you desire. So that, of course, is a problem. So I think having a good diverse team and having, maybe some training in place to really focus on the issue, I mean, that's a great move in the right direction.
From your lips to God's ear.
All right, moving on. So we have another interesting article on TechStrong AI, and it's the chief AI officer for Solace. And he gives his 5 AI tech advancements that he thinks are really useful utilizing AI. So the first one is transforming analog events into digital events and using event mesh to distribute the event information among applications, which will streamline and make faster intelligence and decisioning. So moving on, his second one is productizing AI into applications for customers. His third one is shortening software delivery cycles, which we've talked a lot about that one. AI for platform engineering, which is going to require more platform engineers to design. This is kind of in the future, AI being able to do this. And then integrated enterprises, because the problem with this, though, is that people are too reliant on siloed or legacy systems, because only 12% have all their data connected across all their departments. So using AI to integrate enterprises. So that's his top 5. What are your thoughts?
I actually love this art, and it's very rare that I kind of get to that because I'm getting old and crotchety. But it was really well thought out series of steps that you got to look at if you're going to operationalize AI in a meaningful way. And far too many of us are just kind of like building or customizing an LLM and throwing some data at it and marveling at the outcome without understanding the implications of what it's going to take to run those at scale consistently in a way that delivers an accurate output. And so he did a nice job of kind of laying out all the things that got to get addressed and modernized and updated in terms of our IT operational processes and the way we think about the interrelationship between everything from software artifacts all the way up to, ultimately what is going to be real-time communications in an event-driven model. How are we going to monitor that? Because we're already seeing a scenario where, frankly, you know, events are happening faster than we're able to comprehend as humans. And that's even without AI. So with AI, things are going to be happening in, I don't know, super sub millisecond. So it's not going to be possible for humans to keep track of the interactions that are occurring across multiple systems in a way that would be enable them to intervene in real time to prevent an outcome. So we're going to need other systems. Maybe we're going to need AI to manage the AI, but we need to think all these things through. And I thought this article was a great step in that general direction.
Yeah, me too. I mean, humans only have so much capacity. So if they want to go past that, they do have to use some sort of augmentation tools, and AI is a great one for speeding up a lot of these processes and catching things really quickly. So it was really great. So I encourage you all to go to TechStrong AI and find that article. And next on our list, we have so much to talk about today. So next, I'm going to kick this one to you, Mike, but am I saying this correct? Tab 9 Extend.
Tab 9, I think.
Yeah, Tab 9. Okay, you wrote an article about Tab 9 extending Gen AI platform for writing code using natural language interface. Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, what's interesting here is they developed their own large language model early, but now they're also adding support for the OpenAI one, and I think the other one is Mistral that they built together or some customized version of that. What it points to, though, is how rapidly LLMs are becoming commodities, right? We're going to be able to swap these things in and out and maybe even orchestrate prompts across multiple LLMs that are optimized for different tasks. And they're just all going to be either A, an API call away, or B, embedded in the application somewhere. It's just been remarkable. I mean, I think this time last year, we were like, LLMs are the coolest, most advanced scientific thing in the world. And now we're kind of like, you know, they're an API call away for, you know, prompt in and prompt out. And it's what you do with them that matters. And the LLM itself has become kind of, oh boy, here's another one. And it's got more parameters than the last one. But it's not like I'm going, holy moly, Batman, there's a whole new way of thinking about this. It's more like, you know, a rapid evolution. But it's just been an amazing advance to the point now where everybody's going to invoke an LLM. You'd be silly not to have it in your application. You might even be considered archaic if you don't have it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of them now. It's really amazing. But I love this because it does reduce the level of skill. And I know that's one issue that we've talked about is the skills gap. So by using the natural language and AI to write this code, that's great. And it's going to save a little bit of manpower down the road.
Well, I hope so. It's not clear to me that these LLMs are going to, I know some folks are like, well, it'll just be like the cloud and we'll have three at the end of the day and they'll all be delivered by a cloud service provider. I think if you look at a lot of these things, there's a lot of open source ones. You can pretty much start using them and customizing them if you want to host your own, or if you just want to expose your data to it, you can do that either in a data center you run or through a cloud service, or even it doesn't even have to be one of the big three. It just has to be anybody who has enough compute power. So I just think that, you know, this is all going to be standard issue equipment before the end of this year.
Yeah, and that's really incredible considering, you know, I feel like it was only about a year and a half ago we start hearing about OpenAI. Then from there, everything just explodes technology-wise. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think what's really was going on there is the innovations were occurring long before OpenAI showed up. It's, you know, what they did is aggregated everything into a large compute service that made it accessible. But you know, it wasn't like they were the only ones working on these models, and as a result, we're now aware of many more of them, and their capabilities are all slightly different. And you know, I think ultimately there's going to be a lot more reliance on narrowly focused LLMs that to automate a task, and I'm going to orchestrate a lot of them together to manage a workflow. And I'm not sure that, you know, the world is going to centralize on two or three really massive models that, you know, do 100 things, shall we say, imperfectly.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know that we want to centralize on only a few. So, you know, use the tools that are best. All right. So the last topic of the day is the schools and educations as it in regard to AI. So there's still some issues with AI in the school system and how teachers are going to respond to students using AI, and then how teachers themselves are using AI for work and different tasks. So some of the concerns are data privacy and, you know, what students are putting out there, what staff is putting out there when they're using this AI. And then do there need to be some policies in place for if students are using AI, how and when they can use this AI? And then how do teachers respond? What's going to be the repercussions if they use AI in a way that they're not supposed to? Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts?
I'm trying to navigate this one because there's nuances here, right? So it is a concern that if I'm just using ChatGPT to help write my essay, am I really learning that topic, or am I just kind of quite literally cutting and pasting something using an advanced technology to, you know, create something that I will use to pass the course? You know, some folks I've talked to on the professor side are like, you know, we're just going to kill the essay altogether because it doesn't really reflect anything. It doesn't reflect the knowledge of the person that we're trying to test. So they might just move away from that. And we'll use other mechanisms to test the level of knowledge. That said, there are tons of folks out there, for whatever reasons, don't have the best writing skills. We'll never be great writers. They're just not designed to be that way. I mean, you and I write for a living. It's like breathing, but for a lot of folks, it's like, you know, they'd rather have their nails pulled. But I think these platforms enable them to articulate ideas that previously they would not have been able to articulate. And I think that's an important service. A lot of folks have some great ideas. They just don't know how to express them entirely. And this gives them a tool to do that. So in that regard, I think it can be awesome. And I also think it has huge implications for areas that can't afford the best teachers and the kids aren't always at the highest level of academic performance. And this gives them a mechanism to kind of, you know, take the imbalance out of that system a little bit. So it's not perfect, but I, all things considered, I'd rather have it than not have it.
I agree 100% because I feel while, yes, there are always going to be people using AI that are just kind of essentially using it to cheat and they're not learning. They're only hurting themselves if they're doing this. But I think for the most part, most students are embracing it as a tool, and it is teaching them. It's teaching them how to write better. It's helping them to put their thoughts out better, especially when you think about English as maybe it's their second language. It's not their most proficient language, and they need, and they're really, really smart, but it's not as easy for them to write in English. So using AI as a tool for writing, using it for research and for information, just like any other tool or any other way that you would do your research or get information. And I think there are some tools out there that teachers can use if they are concerned about overuse of AI. There are some tools, I don't know how well they work, that, you know, apparently can show if they used AI for the whole thing.
I'm dubious as to whether those things actually work, but I think if you're a professor, you should be able to tell if somebody, you know, just quite literally went to ChatGPT and had it complete the assignment for it, because it you can feel it in the copy and the flow. It's very mechanical. Now, if somebody's using that and then they're extending it and customizing it, and they're just using it as an outline to get started, and then they create something from there, I'm okay with that. I mean, it's essentially a research tool at that end. It's not much different than, you know, running a Google search and copy and pasting articles and citing them in your paper anyway. So in that regard, it's okay. But, you know, you should have some sort of sniff test in your mind as you read something and keep it in mind. And I guess the other side of that too, though, is outside of school or anywhere else, it's just too easy to create content that is, shall we say, less than reputable. And, you know, we all got to get better at kind of just assuming that whatever's presented to us, or at least be skeptical of it immediately as to where it came from and its provenance. And I think schools will probably be the first place that might need to apply that skepticism on a daily basis. And then hopefully, you know, maybe we'll teach the kids not to believe everything they read and see either.
Absolutely. So do you think there should be a blanket policy across the school, or should it be left to the teachers?
I think we should teach these kids how to use this stuff responsibly and what makes sense. Now, if they're going to just copy and paste something, to your point, yes, they are hurting themselves, but they're also hurting other kids because, you know, if there's a grading system that's on a curve or whatever, you know, suddenly they're higher up the curve than they should be. So there is this issue about, you know, who really knows what based on how we test and grade. But who knows? Maybe the way we test and grade needs to be looked at, because maybe we're not really having the right mechanisms in place for doing that anyway. So AI may force a larger issue that is probably long overdue.
Very true. And with that, I think we've come to the end of our topics for today. Do you have any final thoughts, Mike?
No, I just think that, look, it's not like the genie's going back in the bottle ever. It's out there. So the challenge and the opportunity now is to figure out how best to apply it responsibly. I'll guarantee you that things are going to go wrong somewhere. And the question is, you know, can we minimize the impact of those things while taking advantage of the good things? Because it's no different than any other innovation that we looked at in history and past, whether it was, you know, firearms to the invention of fire. But there's good things and bad things about all these things. It's just a question of how we control them.
Well said. Well, I want to thank our audience today for tuning in. And if you missed last week, go in and catch last week's. We'll be here every week. Have a great day.
See you, everybody.